White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 486.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello, and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with WarEagleReader.com, and by people like you, the Auburn family. You are the AU Wishbone family. You're our Patreon.com family, and we love you. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we're back for just a quick check-in on how things are going with the players actually out wearing helmets and stuff, and that's pretty exciting. So we'll talk a little bit about that tonight. Got a few other things to get into. How are things going for you, sir?
Hey, hanging in there, like everybody else, doing the best I can do. Excited to theoretically have football on the horizon?
Yeah, theoretical. I have some numbers about people's opinion on that we'll get to in a little while. But how are you feeling about that right now? What do you think? What are you thinking in terms of football? Is it going to happen? Are we going to get all of it? Is it going to happen on time? How are you feeling right now?
I think there's going to be the SEC was smart to wait again. I think there's going to be obviously a big spike with students back on campus, and we're seeing that.
Yeah.
I think there's the potential a lot of places for this, what people are calling the reverse bubble, which is like we go online only, but we still have football.
Hmm.
I could see that. Especially in situations where we send the rest of the students home and just have the football team on campus again, I'm sure it's safer for them that way. But Auburn's not close to doing that yet, but some other schools are. I mean, there's some ACC schools have done that. So we'll see. Alabama, Tuscaloosa had over 500 positive tests today. They're shutting down bars in town and all that kind of stuff. So, I think the season's definitely going to start. I think, one of the ways some weird things are going to happen. But we're so close now. It's a month until the SEC games start, and I think there's a small school game like this weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
Yeah, our little region of Illinois is currently the worst part. We're worse than Chicago. We're worse than Springfield. Our little area over here, St. Clair County area near on the Illinois side of the river from St. Louis, is they just announced earlier today that the governor was going to step in and shut everything down on Wednesday. And then the businesses and the mayors all went crazy, and so now they're going to wait a week and see if things get better. But so it won't hurt the businesses maybe. But we've climbed back up over like 8, 9, 10% rate, which is what they really don't want. In fact, I think you have to be down around 5 or 6 to have things ease back up. And we had gotten down like that, but now we're the worst. So it just seems like wherever they ease up, wherever in the country things get better, they ease up and then they get worse. It's just up. It's like whack-a-mole.
But you can get it down to a point where then easing up is relative. You still have to wear a mask and wash your hands.
Yeah.
And all those kind of things. But I think you can get it down to a point where there are so few infected people that easing up is not the danger it is in some places. But
yeah, that's the goal. It just seems like
yes.
hasn't quite worked out that way, but certainly we hope so. So, yeah, I'm not. We're still doing our face to face classes. I go in and teach eight different courses multiple times a week face to face. We got our classes split in half, so half my students are at home watching on video while the other half are in class, and they alternate. But we're still doing it, so that's good. We'll see how long we can go, and it's still very weird for me to talk for 6 hours a day with a mask on my face. That's taking some getting used to. But standing behind a shield, I feel like Boris Yeltsin waiting for the KGB to shoot at him in the middle of Red Square. But, yeah. So, we've got...
I was going to make a joke that, You know the season's getting close because we're having serious discussions about planning the barbecue episode.
Oh yes, yes. We'll tell the folks. Yeah, we're planning.
Well, I mean, again, we want to save the week right before the Monday before the game for kind of game week game previews of the mm-hmm. opening game against Kentucky, mm-hmm. and so we're probably thinking the week before that we'll yeah. do the barbecue show.
Big news.
Yeah, it is a breaking news again. The opening game is the 26th, so we'd probably do the, you know, Kentucky preview the 21st of September. Do the barbecue show like the Monday after Labor Day, like September 14th.
Uh oh.
What?
I clicked on the soundboard and nothing happened. It's like your dream world came true.
We need the soundboard. It's got to get in shape for the season. We need
it. It's gotten flabby and out of shape, man. It's put on.
I thought it had an exercise regimen. I thought you came in a couple times, you clicked the buttons, you made it good.
I thought so too. I don't understand it. Let me restart it and try one thing here. It may be that with all of the other, because it worked last week. You remember it was working last week. It may be that with all of the audio and video stuff I've been having to do for Dragon Con and for my classes and for everything else, it may be that I accidentally switched something over. Yeah, it's dead as a doornail. Well, the one time it kind of did this before, I restarted the computer, and that helped. But I'm not going to restart the computer in the middle of our show. Don't worry, my computer is the one that's recording all this, so I can't really do that. But I will make a note.
You just have to do the sound effects without it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll make a note to restart it before I leave tonight. So. Hopefully it'll work then. Well, anyway, I was just going to say, and I say huge, because the barbecue show is huge, and it's a big deal. It's our biggest show of the year, and for those that don't know what we're talking about, it's not really barbecue. It involves barbecue, but that is when John and I each go out separately and acquire some form of barbecue, whether it be from our own smoker or from some local establishment or whatever. We have a nice plate of it in front of us, and we sit down to do the show. It's the one show every year that people expect to hear us eating on the air. I think we've gotten one email ever from a listener who's like, man, I got to listen to you guys eat on the air. And I'm like, yes, that's the point. You tune into that show specifically to hear us eat on the air, because we eat the barbecue and its magical properties bestow unto us the knowledge and of how each team's going to do every year. And I mean, I'm not going to say that it's been 100% accurate all these years, but I'm not going to say it hasn't, because I haven't really kept up with it. So maybe it has, right? Maybe it has been 100% accurate all this time. I don't know. It's possible. Anything's possible. Sure. So that's what we do. We eat the barbecue and we give our pronouncements of what the and then lately, the last couple of years, what we've been kind of doing then is sort of kind of like comparing notes and agreeing on our consensus pick. You know, like you might say somebody's 9-3 and I say 8-4, and we kind of look at it and go, yeah, you know, 9-3, you know, or 8-4. Yeah. So it's yep. really fun. It's our big show. So we'll be doing that. You say probably around the 14th, something like that.
Yep.
Okay. Works for me. Mm. Okay, so meanwhile, the players are out running around practicing. Yeah, they're out there running around.
Gotta get better at celebrating.
Gotta get better. Gotta, yeah. But they're out there. They're looking good. They're running around. We kind of miss Booby. Missing Booby. Miss Booby out there, but we got other good players to take the place. So I just enjoy saying Booby in Gus's voice. Booby. Yeah, we miss Booby. But what are they doing? This is what they haven't gotten to do all year, right? The last time they wore uniforms and pads and everything was in the bowl game, right?
Absolutely. We had fall camp practice this week. The last time they had a scrimmage Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and the last time that Auburn players were on a field actually playing football before that was the bowl game. They had, you know, no formal spring practices, no scrimmages in the spring, and this. So it's been a long time. And so we know a little bit about what happened, but not a ton. But it was big because it was the first, you know, scrimmage for all the young guys, even the guys that enrolled early. And one of the things Gus talked about was the fact that they'd had so much time doing walkthrough and kind of off-season communication with the players that everybody knew their assignments pretty well, that that wasn't an issue.
Mm-hmm.
It was really more of just get the young guys used to, you know, this is the level of intensity that we're going to play at full speed when we go out here on this field, and that's what it's going to be like in a game, and you have to be ready to go that speed every play all the time.
Yeah, there were two things about that that were interesting to me. One was that they had kind of walked through a thing so much that it wasn't like the first day of practice or camp or whatever, usually where they're just starting out. They actually had spent a lot of time kind of going through it mentally and you know, I guess like in a ballroom or something as opposed to out on the field in pads. But they had more knowledge of what to do than they normally would, even the freshmen, right?
Yes.
So I thought that was pretty cool. So there was DJ Williams was missing, right? And they kept asking Gus, like, well, where was he? He's like, well, he'll be with us soon. Yeah, but where was he? It should be soon that he'll be. He was not going to say. So what do you think's going on there?
Well, again, they reported that there were four players who didn't participate in the scrimmage because they're being held out because of COVID tests.
Hmm.
And so because he wouldn't say about DJ Williams, I suspected that he's one of those four.
Yeah.
We don't know that, and they can't say that, but because we know there was four players held out, and we knew that DJ Williams was held out, and they wouldn't say why he was held out, then it's probable that that's what it is. And Gus said all those four are supposed to be back at practice this week. There's going to be another scrimmage next Saturday, so they'll get a chance to show what they can do then.
The other thing that's interesting to me about it is that nobody else has had any more time either. You know what I mean? In other words, it's not like Auburn is behind the eight ball on this. Everybody's in the same boat. So if we go out there on the first week of the season, the first Saturday, and don't look like we know what we're doing, it's probably going to be every team's going to be that way a little bit. So, yeah. So it's just a different deal for everybody. So that's good. So they had a scrimmage. Didn't look like anybody got hurt, right, you said? And then
again, goal one is nobody gets hurt.
Right.
This season's challenging enough without a major injury at this point.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is that it's like, you know, every season there's almost a ticking clock or a ticking bomb on every player, and you don't know if it's going to go off or not just with regular injuries. And then you throw in this whole COVID nonsense, and you're in a situation where there really could be a ticking clock for every player, and you don't know, you know, the player could be physically fine, but yet have to sit out for 14 days, and it's no longer, you know, it's just as if he'd gotten a sprained ankle or something almost. So it's just a really surreal situation that we're not used to, and you need everybody ready to go. You need all hands on deck. You need the – I was looking at some of our players, and we've got – more depth. I'm just looking at the offense. Obviously, the offensive line is a work in progress and a mystery to be solved. But and while we do have a good deal of depth at quarterback, it's not it's depth, but it's shallow depth. You know what I mean? We have six quarterbacks, but honestly, of the six, the only one I really trust anywhere near a football game is Nick's, right? The other five are either freshmen, walk-ons, or
if
something.
If Nick's misses the game against a good team, we're in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a given.
Because, I mean, Garrett is a freshman. He's not going to know what's going on.
Nope.
And Sandberg is 173 years old. He's not your prime option. We brought in a transfer, Grant Lloyd. What do we know? He's a senior. What do we know about him? He must have had a year to go and decided to transfer from somewhere else. But
he,
I don't know what's going
on. He played in the MAC.
Okay.
He's a grad transfer. I mean, I think they like him as kind of a, you know, if we need a backup and we're not sure about Sandberg, another guy that could potentially play in a spot start or a series or two, things wouldn't fall apart.
Yeah, you know Grant, he holds that clipboard real well. They know nobody on the team holds a clipboard like Grant. He's going to hold it good. He'll hold it up. Running, I'm just going to zip through the positions very quickly. John, you can throw in your comments. Like, running back, we lost Booby, but – you know, I feel like our running back situation is as good as it has been in at least 4 or 5 years. Probably the last time I felt this good about it, and it didn't work out, you know, was when we had Petway and Kerryon both. Mm-hmm. And that was two really good running backs. But even then, it was really just a depth of two. And when one of them got hurt, the other one had to do everything. And we know how that worked out. You know, we couldn't make it through the whole season. So we've got seven running backs, a junior, three sophomores, three freshmen. But, I mean, we really don't know who's going to start. We really don't know how it's going to play out. We've got some that are – like we've got one that's huge and one that's tiny. And then five kind of in the middle. You and I both suspect that DJ Williams will get the start at the beginning of the season just based on experience. But, and in fact, I saw where one Auburn commentator had done his own depth chart and had Mark Anthony Richards at the bottom. And yet, everything I've heard is that Mark Anthony Richards could end up being, you know, at least until Tank kind of comes along and learns everything, Richards could be our best option for an all-around back. I don't know how he's at the bottom. So what are your thoughts on the running back situation there?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think it's DJ William, Tank Bigsby, and Mark Anthony Richards. I think those are the best three players at that position. And I think, you know, I think Shivers is going to get some playing time, but I think it's more of the, whatever, the Corey Grant change of pace kind of
thing. Yeah, kind of role players.
Yes, but I think the other guys could all be every down SEC backs. And I think especially Richards and Bigsby could be. I think they have a you know, breakaway capability that we haven't had. And I think Richards is a very good pass receiver, which we could really use. We haven't had that really since Kerryon was there. And so I think those guys are going to play. I think it's – I mean, again, like people love Joyner. I get it. I don't think the coaches see him that way at all. I think he's not going to be an everyday running back.
I'm going to call Shivers and Joyner Dungeons and Dragons because they're role players. Ba-dum-bum.
I like it.
I got no sound effects. Sorry, I just have to just go with my material here. There we go. But the thing about Joyner, get this. I watched about three or four games in their entirety this week just when I was looking for entertainment. And by the way, I had forgotten that we beat the living snot out of Mississippi State and that we were having to recover an onside kickoff to keep from having Ole Miss come back and tie us or beat us at the end. So those two games were very different last year. But the thing that got me was I think it was in the Ole Miss game that Joyner got several carries and he fumbled the ball twice. So I wasn't surprised we didn't really see him the rest of the season because he looks a sight. You know what I mean? He looks the deal. He looks the business, but he fumbled twice. So that's not going to get you many carries if you start doing that, unless you're Booby. Because, you know, when Booby fumbles, well, he felt bad about it. So
that was back when we had your how did you describe the running back depth last year? You know, a bunch of Swiss Army knife pieces or whatever.
But no actual blade, right? Yeah, we had the we had the can opener and the toothpick and everything else, but we didn't have an actual blade on that Swiss Army knife.
I don't think that's the toothpick.
Well, yeah, it's the only detachable part, I guess, right? That wasn't the exact analogy I used the way I use it just now, but I think that pretty much sums it up, is that we had all the little accoutrements, but we didn't have the actual every down blade to cut things with, and that's kind of what I'm hoping that one of these guys will be. I did see a couple of moves that DJ Williams did in a couple of games other than LSU, but for the most part, I just felt like he was so limited. He just couldn't ever break free. He seemed to go down when the first couple of guys hit him, which, yeah, a couple of guys hit you, you're going to go down. But for an every down power back like he was kind of supposed to be, he didn't seem to have a lot of power. So, he rolled out there like a 76 Mercury Marquis, but he only had like a four-cylinder turbo, it seemed like, under the hood. So we'll see if they work him now. I'm sure they say that Nix is a whole lot physically bigger this year. So maybe DJ's, you know, built up some muscle and resilience. He was just a freshman last year, wasn't he?
He was a true freshman.
Yeah. So no kid. Yeah. So you got to think he's gonna be better. All right. So we're thinking that probably Mark Anthony Richards and Tank and DJ probably in that order more or less. And the other thing I wanted to touch on, the tight ends. I was just reading here that we have six tight ends on the roster, which I mean, normally Gus would look at that and say, I got to figure out which one of them is going to be out there blocking. But with those guys, I mean, some of them are pass catchers. There's like some threats. So, I was reading that Pegues, whatever his name, yeah, he's 6'2", 300 pounds currently, and could be a heck of a blocking back. But you also got to think, if he can catch, you throw the ball to him, who's going to bring that dude down, man? Mm-hmm. And then
the other guys are all like 6'6".
Yeah, 6'7", 270 is Frazier. And we've got Fromm and Deal, attorneys at law out there that are both, they can both catch. They're kind of, I get the sense that they're both kind of Lutzenkirchen type dudes. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that, they're that good, but they're that right. Physically that size.
They're not going to go out there and like dominate as an offensive lineman tight end, but they can kind of make a move and catch a pass and get you a first down or something. That's kind of what I mean.
Yes.
So we've got some interesting matchups if we use them as receiving tight ends that we haven't really done before. And I'm kind of looking forward to like seeing them covered by a 5'10 safety or something like that. You know, that would be nice. That'd be nice.
You know, it's always Auburn in that situation that we're having to cover the other team's gigantic tight end. And
yes.
One day I look forward to that changing in our favor.
That would be nice. Yeah, the last time we really had a tight end that was that big and tough and could beat the defensive backs was probably Uzoma.
CJ Johnson?
But CJ Uzoma was pretty good. He went to the NFL.
Yeah.
He caught a few. He didn't dominate the way I think he probably should have, but I thought he was. And then, I'm not going to say anything about the offensive line because who the heck knows. But the last thing is, we have 16 wide receivers on the roster, not including the one that just committed as a 2020. So what do you make of all that? We are stacked at receiver right now. And just two of them are. Yeah, just two of them are seniors.
But it's also like, I mean, if you recruit 4 a year, that's 16. Right.
Yeah.
And but you got to figure you're going to play, you know, eight.
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Two deep at each one. Yeah.
Some true freshmen will be redshirted and some other guys will be on the bench. So, and then the other part of that is you got a couple seniors, but Seth Williams could easily go pro after this year.
Yeah.
Schwartz could go pro or go run track after this year. And so you got to have some other guys ready to step up. And I think they do. I think they've done a real good job recruiting.
Oh, yeah. The class that's coming in, the class that just signed that's coming in, they've got, basically three or four four-star guys that are all tall and can run and can catch. That's what you want. Man, that's so nice. Okay, I just wanted to run through that a little bit. We'll see about the offensive line as things go along. But I think I did want to mention we've got a commitment, right, from the Goodwin kid for running back?
Yes. He had a good game this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
High school football played well, so that's exciting. He's our big, kind of next running back of the future after in the next class.
He got hurt, missed a whole year, and that's always troubling when a running back gets hurt in high school. You don't know how they're going to roll out, but it looked like he looked pretty good the other night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. It's good that they're getting to play some, you know.
Especially after an injury, sure.
Well, sure, yeah. What about the kicking game?
We don't really know anything. We know they played. They had live kicking in their scrimmage, so live field goal block, live punting and punt blocking and punt returning and stuff. So that was big to get those guys out there and with the battle at punter. soon to be a special episode of the Wishbone where we do a 2-hour in-depth breakdown of the punting.
Oh Lord, I didn't get the company wide memo on that. Oh no.
But the Australian guy was out there, the new Australian guy.
Yes, the law. We have to have an Australian guy, so I'm glad they're keeping up with that.
Yeah. So we'll see. And, a young kicker, the younger Carlson, struggled a little bit last year when Gus was asking him to kick longer field goals, but had a great game against Alabama. He's probably a little bigger and stronger this offseason, so that's going to be interesting to see. But anytime you practicing special teams is one of those things you have to do, but it just scares the crap out of everybody because it's dangerous. I mean, you could really get hurt on kickoff or punt coverage, and So it just shows you, like you were saying, like how the need they feel they have to be ready for these things, that they're doing that.
Yeah. It's interesting that there's just a whole cottage industry now of Australian punters, I guess, because their version of football so emphasizes kicking on the run on the open field that those kids have spent their whole life taking several steps and basically punting a ball that's shaped like that. So it's not as, yeah. they've developed. It's like if we had kids that were 5 or 6 year olds that wanted to be a punter their whole life and all they ever did was run around punting. That's what these guys have done. So, you know, there's not something in the water necessarily, maybe, but not necessarily. It's just that they, that's the kind of thing they've practiced all this time. You know, it's the same reason that all the soccer players end up being good field goal kickers, you know. So we talked about the tight ends catching passes. What do you think about
actually
that?
Actually caught passes in the scrimmage, 4 or 5. So.
Wow, man. I mean, is that going to be one of our signals that it really is the offensive coordinator calling the plays and not the and not Gus?
I mean, I think people use it as a signal. I don't know whether it is or not. I think I think it's going to be one of those things. I think we're going to throw the ball to the tight end more. I really believe that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope so. It would seem stupid to waste these weapons. I mean, I know on offense, honestly, we've got weapons all over the field. There's no excuse other than the offensive line just letting Bo get killed every play before he can do anything. There's no excuse for us not moving the ball somehow with the talent we've got at running back, at tight end, at receiver, at quarterback. I mean, dang, you know, if they can open any holes and give any protection, we should have a decent offense.
I agree.
Of course, the question.
Experienced, talented quarterback and some good receivers, you know, good running backs, good tight ends, we ought to be able to move the ball.
So do you have any thoughts about the offensive line? I mean, I just honestly, I'm just at the position of I just am going to wait and see, because we don't even know who's going to be playing which positions really yet, other than maybe center or whatever.
No, we don't. I mean, we think they have 10 guys total that are competing for the 5 spots, and they're, they broke them up into 2 groups of 5 and put them out there, and they just played. You know, they let them go against the they had kind of a first team, second team, and they just let them go against the first and second team defense to see how it went, and evaluate them. Then they'll stick them back out there next Saturday. So, I think they've learned a lot, and I think they'll continue to learn a lot doing this. And some of it is, you know, how can they play in live action in the kind of plays that Auburn wants to run? Can they execute them can they get push? Can they protect Bo when they need to? So we'll see.
It's remarkable to me how completely dependent on the offensive line so much of Gus's offenses always are, and yet how it seems sometimes to be his lowest priority in terms of having good players there. It seems like he worries so much about the pieces, the chess pieces he can move around, that he forgets about the pawns on the chessboard. You know, you got to have something out there in front paving the way, and that's why old Barcelona Dragon makes me happy, because I feel like he's getting it done.
Yep.
Man, I hope that really works out. I hope he works out as good as it seems like he is, and I hope that we end up keeping him for a good long time. Well, let's see. So anything else that you want to make sure we hit about the team scrimmage?
One of the things they pointed out and different people have talked about is that they're thinking about the, you know, possibility of players missing games. So versatility and depth, like they want to have 3 deep at every position, not just the 2 deep. And they want to have guys that can play more than one spot. So, I mean, they got, you know, cornerbacks and safeties, you know, playing those positions. They talked about Smoke Monday playing cornerback some as an example. Linebackers playing both spots, defensive linemen moving around one side to the other, you know, the bucks and the defensive ends and all that. And the same thing with the offensive linemen. They need some other guys who could play center, guys who could play multiple spots. They talked about the transfer council, who's the transfer offensive lineman from Akron, and how he could play, you know, basically every spot on the line. And so they like that versatility. It may not mean he might start, but he might be the, you know, a guy that could come off the bench and jump in as a veteran in any of those spots and be okay. So I think that's a big thing. I think, you know, it's important to have guys that, you know, the old, they're not doing this with the young guys. They're no true freshmen. They're sticking in this position.
Right.
And asking to play more than one spot. But the veteran guys who know what they're doing, they're going to ask them to do that. So.
Yeah, I think you have to have those kind of plans with such unpredictability coming up. Just there's just no telling how it's going to go. This is just going to be such a strange season. We just won't know from one week to the next who's playing for either team, for us or whoever we're playing that Saturday. It'll be almost like a big surprise every weekend, you know. Almost like in 2010, every week at the end of the season, we didn't know if Cam was going to play or not. You know, we're like chewing our fingernails. Is Cam going to be able to play against Georgia? Is Cam going to be able to play against Alabama? Is he going to be able to play in the SEC championship game? And every week, we had to kind of chew our fingernails and wait and see who was going to be playing. And it's going to kind of be like that this whole season, I'm afraid.
No, I think it's a good analogy.
Yeah. So more scrimmages to come.
Yeah, they're planning to do three more. And just because they need the evaluation time and they need to get the younger players thrown in the fire a little bit.
Yeah.
And again, like you were saying, they need it for the offensive line. They need it to kind of sort out who's ready to go
mm-hmm.
at week one.
That's right.
Because as we know, we don't get to start with the little sisters of the poor.
No. We start with the little mild cats of the Lexington, and then it gets harder from there. And that's not easy. I mean,
it's not the sucky Kentucky of old.
No. And then we got to go straight from there to Athens, don't we? So, man, at least we get to start at home. That's the one thing about it, is that at least we start at home. But wasn't Gus saying something to the effect of he felt like we got the bad end of the deal? I mean, we're not Arkansas, but we didn't get a good, you know, we didn't get to play Arkansas twice like it seems like Alabama and Georgia did. So, you know.
No, but they did. One of the things they talked about, and I think Auburn's taken the positive approach to that, is that our tough schedule the last few years has made us able to expect that and handle it. And so we're prepared for it, and some other teams might not be. And we're prepared for that grind.
Yeah, that was funny. It's like, this isn't anything we're not used to. This is just, we call this every year, man. We hear all these other programs whining and crying, we're having to play Georgia and Alabama. And we're like, yeah. And LSU, and Texas A&M. That's just every year, sir. That's the way, that's our schedule every freaking year. It's not that big of a deal, honestly. So, any last thoughts about the scrimmages and the pads and everything before we head toward our listener question segment?
No, other than, again, the entry thing is not nothing. Like, it's
no.
We're going to be crossing our fingers every time this scrimmage thing happens, and every other SEC team is too. So
it's true. It's like we're so kind of focused on the virus that we might even forget that there's plenty of other ways for players to miss whole games or seasons. You know, it's not just the virus. That would be our luck, is that everybody never gets sick, and yet we have five players break their legs or something. So. Yeah, there's a lot more going on than just the virus, and I think it kind of swamps the news about everything else, and I understand that, but, you know, yeah, there's other things to worry about. So we've got to, of course, thank our patrons. John, we don't have ads on our show. We have in the past had a few very brief ones here or there, but we don't anymore have ads on our show. We are entirely depending upon our listeners to keep our shows going, this show primarily, because it's on the most by far. But, you know, you and I do quite a few White Rocket type shows when we're able, when time is allowing. And Jared and Alan and all of our other hosts do quite a few shows on here. And so we need our listeners to keep that going to be able to make it possible. And so I want to thank the folks who are currently making this show and our other programs possible. These are folks who also get to participate in things like our March Madness pool with us and our Formula One tournament. We didn't do one this year because it was just so crazy. It just, the Formula One thing was all so messed up, and we didn't even know if they were going to race to the last minute. So I might have made up a team, but honestly, I don't even remember at this point. But we do all sorts of things all year long to keep our patrons entertained and busy. Also, they, of course, have early access to things like We Believed. And so to join their ranks for as little as $1 a month, go to auwishbone.com. That's pretty easy to remember, easy to find. And by the way, at auwishbone.com, I just the other day posted a permanent link to episode 8 about the 2009, 2010, 2011, and 12 seasons. So now, if you want to listen to We Believed that covers the Chizik era and includes Cam and Nick Fairley and all that, you no longer have to go digging through, you know, back episodes in iTunes or whatever. Just go to www.auwishbone.com, and if you scroll down to the bottom half of the page, all 8 episodes we've produced so far are there. You can just listen to them at your leisure on your phone, on your computer, however you want. You can download them however you want to do it. Now, for as little as a dollar a month, you can join the ranks of folks that get to do that. They get to hear those new early before anybody else and everything else and support our show. Here are our current supporters that we thank. We have to thank Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Phil Amthor, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, William Morgan, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, Logan Chilton, Tom Anderson, Richard Stevens, William Glenn Matthews, and then we have to thank Connor Davis, James Greenwell, Emmanuel Seaman, WDE Ritchie, Clinton Stewart and Christopher Stewart, Phil Davis, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, and AU Falling Up, Kevin Smith, Winston Boddy, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, David Hegler, Mickey B, Shane Bailey, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Ann Kanjian, Clay Henson, George Gaston, Catherine England, John McCune, David Evers, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Rich Reimer, Timothy, Chris Hilton, Di Bama. And let's see, on to the next group. Sarah Hines, Darius Benton, Blake Heron, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, and Kevin Kinoy, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Hugh Anderson, Rob Morgan, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, Russell Milling, Chris Thrash, Earl Ricks. Whoo, that crowd took the breath out of me. Then we've got Spanky, Chris, Jason Albrick, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Stephen Wyatt, Matthew Flowers, Howard Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Trevor Johnson, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, Brent Rumble, Justin Bean, and finally, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Mitch Vigicana, Joey Miller, and Mark Squire, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all so much. Go to Three W's. Or as Tom Brokaw would say, go to www.auwishbone.com. Woo! All right. Before we get to the listener questions, I did a poll. I did a poll on Twitter the last 24 hours where I asked, how many games will Auburn play this fall / winter? I didn't say spring. You know, I just said if, you know, this fall and winter, meaning like through December, January, whatever. I gave the following options. 10+, you only get 4 choices, so I said 10 plus, which would be like everything and more, a bowl game, SEC championship, whatever. I said 7-9, 4-6, and 0-3. And I thought the answers that came back were very interesting because 10 or more was the winner. So more a plurality of voters, and there were 85 voters' responses, a plurality of 37.6% said 10 plus. Now, on the one hand, that was a pretty clear plurality. 37.6 was well above any other response. On the other hand, it's barely above a third, which means that almost two-thirds of respondents said something else. So, again, I thought that was very interesting that a lot of people thought 10 plus, and yet it really only amounted to about just over 3 out of 10 that said that. 7 of 9 on Star Trek. No. 7
to 9 games.
Yes. That was 16.5%. That was the low end. So it was interesting that just below 10 games was the least popular option. And then the second most popular, 25.9, said 4, 5, or 6 games. And 20% said 0 to 3. So it was actually, I thought, remarkably evenly divided among those four options. What are your thoughts?
That's what leapt out to me when I looked at the numbers, was the balance between the different options.
Yeah.
And that the second highest choice was 4 to 6.
Yes. Yeah, that really was interesting. Mm-hmm. So it's like most people by far, the biggest group by far is 10 plus, but behind them, the next biggest was only 4, 5, or 6 games. That's just, it's like people think we're either going to play the entire season with no problem, or we're going to be lucky to get half of it in.
But I think those people were saying, like, we think we're going to start, but we just don't think we're going to finish.
And yeah, that could be. And then 1/5, 1 out of every 5 respondents thought we probably aren't even going to get more than a week into the season.
Yeah.
I should have given one option as just 0 instead of 0 to 3. It would have been interesting to see how many people picked 0. I don't think it was – I bet it would have been 10 and 10. 0 would have been 10, and 1 to 3 would have been 10. That's just my prediction. Yes. Because I think that there's still a number of people that think, like my wife, that think it's not going to even happen, that it's still going to stop. But I think that, I honestly think that folks like that, they're thinking rationally, but this is not an entirely rational process, because people get very irrational when millions and billions of dollars are at stake, you know?
You're correct. But also, I think, again, the kind of reverse bubble thing we talked about earlier with the students. Yeah, the danger zone is what Auburn is doing now, in-person classes, students going out, and then the football players are sitting next to them in class. That's
yeah,
the danger zone.
It is.
For the sport. So.
But they want to avoid that appearance that it's a football program first that also offers classes, and so they don't want to have the football team there and all the students at home. Yeah. It's just a bad look.
They can do classes online and still have students in town, right?
I mean, one would think
that. I mean, NC State's doing that, I think, although they just paused football practice, so.
And nobody noticed.
Well, again, they have an ACC game in 16 days, and they just had to pause football practice for a few days because of an outbreak. So. That kind of thing's coming.
If NC State cancels football and a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there to see it, did it actually happen? Oh, NC State. All right. The soundboard is not working, but I actually went into the guts of my computer, and I think I can use the right click and VLC to do this.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Look at me pulling a rabbit out of the hat.
I did, man. I had to go into the I had to go into the folder where I keep the actual files, and there's a lot of files in there. But I mean, I had to go in and like manually do this.
And I say you.
Oh, there it is. All right. It takes me like 5 minutes to find a sound effect and play it this way. It's a complete pain in the butt, but at least it's possible until I get it restarted. So what questions have we from around our listening audience, John?
All right. First question is from our friend Auburn Elvis.
Yes. I can't play it, so just go ahead. Thank you very much.
So he says, in the Iron Bowl, the first time Alabama starts a drive on their 25-yard line, Auburn should substitute in all 100 players on defense and leave them in for the snap, intentionally drawing the 5-yard penalty, but executing the most incredible troll job in college football history. Great idea or unfairly great idea?
Well, I think I can just do this.
Smoke weed every day.
I like it, though. I like it.
It would be funny.
It would be good.
Again, I think, you know, keeping Bo in on all the punts in that game is a must now.
Yes. That's awesome. Oh, man. Good times.
All right. Our next question is from Carl Von Drucker.
Yep.
Who says, After a short period in pads, the first since January, why doesn't Gus name the three deep and solve world hunger? Is it me, or were the reporters ridiculous for Gus's press conference?
Oh, they're just dying for news, man. It's been so long.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, I'll cut them a break this one time. But
I ask actual football questions, too.
I wanted to say, I saw on Twitter, and it's some of our listeners, too, I'm pretty sure, and everybody's entitled to their opinion, but I just want to point out I don't share it. You know, Brandon, our good buddy, friend of the show, Brandon Marcello, dear, sweet human being, love him, love having him on here, great. And he's gone off to be a national reporter now, and that's awesome. He totally deserves it. I see every time that, like, the reporters get mentioned and somebody said, who are the best, who are the worst, and everything for Auburn, I understand people jumping on Crepia, remember him, that went off to Oregon or whatever, but they get on Brandon, and I'm just like, what were you people seeing in him that was so bad? I always thought he was fair. He would try to find the deep answers to questions.
I think he worked hard.
Yes, absolutely he did. I just don't get it. I mean, my first thought is that people want reporters that only report good stuff and make them feel better. And Brandon reported objectively, and when things were bad, he would tell us. And maybe they just don't want that. I don't know. I mean, you know, the times I've gotten in the biggest trouble on here is when we would do a prediction and I would predict that Auburn would lose something. Man, I got trouble over those times, you know. So maybe it's just that because the other thing that occurred to me then, I kind of followed that thought, that thread to its logical conclusion. And what kind of occurred to me is that so much of Auburn media is clearly people that come to it already loving Auburn and kind of wanting to give Auburn the benefit of the doubt. You and I are like that, but that's what we are. We've never for a minute said
we were objective.
Never. I from the day one, I've called us the drive-by shooting of editorial sports journalism. We are 100% homers. We both went to Auburn at the same time, and we love it, and that's all we've ever been or ever will be. There's no objective reporting here. We play the freaking communist Soviet national anthem. We talk about Alabama. That is not something objective reporters do, John.
Yes, it is, man.
It should be. It should be. It's just factual, but, you know, yeah. But no, I feel like maybe that you've got a
And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
Exactly, Sheriff. But I feel like you've got reporters that, you know, when you ask Auburn people, who do you really like as Auburn reporters, they always say, like, Mark Murphy and those guys. And they're kind of like, they're not the same thing as Brandon, really, you know, because they're Auburn people that cover Auburn as opposed to reporters that have been assigned to cover Auburn. You know what I mean? It's a different... They come at it from, we're Auburn guys, now let's find stuff to talk about that people want to hear that'll make them happy, as opposed to, we're here to find the real story and get you the real dirt. And it's just... I don't think that the latter is something that all Auburn fans really appreciate. Am I off base on that?
No, I think it's fair.
Okay.
Some people, that's what they want.
So, well, I'm going to miss not having him around.
I am too. We got a few more questions, though.
Okay.
All right. Next one is from Keith Dale Spawn, who says, even if COVID levels spike back up above the peak levels, will they still allow 125% capacity for the Iron Bowl if Auburn is having a better season than Alabama?
Probably.
Yeah. You will see all the restrictions get thrown out the window if Alabama feels threatened.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
All right. Next question is from Preston Settle. Who asked questions about the Kentucky game.
Uh-oh.
He says, first, can Joey Gatewood win the quarterback race at Kentucky against Terry Wilson?
I mean, he couldn't beat Bo Nix, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, Gatewood still hasn't been cleared that we know of. So, if he was cleared tomorrow, I don't think he could beat Terry Wilson. I think Terry Wilson's a veteran, and I think the coaches like him. And I think Gatewood's the long-term answer there, but I think... And he'll play some this year if he gets clear, but I think Wilson's definitely going to be the starter. Will Gatewood start a QB against his former team in the opening game?
No.
I would say no. Even if he was cleared and had, I would be shocked if that happened. All right. If Joey gets the opportunity to start, could he play effectively against Auburn's defense?
I think it'd be a mixed bag. I think if you gave him another year or two, maybe. But I think he just hasn't played very much, which is it's kind of maybe this was Gus's plan all along. Maybe he knew that Gatewood was going to transfer. He's like, I'm not giving him an experience. I don't want to give him any game experience. Why would I do that? Just going to use it against us next year.
But also, like, he's inexperienced in throwing the ball, and he can't line up and just run the power run against Auburn's defense. That's not a recipe for success.
Right.
And he signs it, Preston Settle, 100% in the Soundboard Fan Club, blame yourself.
Well, if I could, if it didn't take me five, oh, whoop, whoop. See, this is so why I have my soundboard thing.
Blame yourself.
That's right. And the fact that it's not working, same thing.
All right. Last question is from Johnny Dent, who says he wrote us at auwishbone@gmail.com. He says, the national media's feelings on Bo Nix never cease to fascinate me. I think the proper assessment on him is that he's got high potential, but some serious work to do to reach his ceiling. On the whole, the media views him significantly more negatively than that, and I wanted to speculate on why that is and get your reaction.
Oh, it's true. It's true. They have him ranked like 100 out of 120 or something.
So is this interesting? So these are his reasons he thinks the media views him that way. Number one, the media remember Jeremy Johnson. God bless him, but there's probably never been a bigger problem of players that got real preseason hype.
God.
Listen, I could say for the record, I will not be writing a Bo Nix hype article about his stats, supposed to be on the WarEagleReader.com.
Oh, Lord. I know it.
All right. Number two, Gus has been effusive in his praise for Bo from the moment he was named starter, and there's a bit of boy cried wolf with Gus in the national media.
Yeah.
They've been bitten one too many times when he tells the media a player in his team's incredible and doesn't pan out.
Yeah, that's fair.
Number three, the media remembers the misses more than the hits. On the whole, Bo played quite well for a true freshman in the SEC, but the biggest mistakes were rather egregious and occurred on big national stages against Oregon and Florida.
Yeah.
His bad decisions stick out more in the media's memory than any of the best plays.
Yeah.
And number four, the bar for great QB has markedly raised in the last 15 years with players like Tua, Burrow, Winston, etc., many of whom came in their freshman year looking great. The more typical model of a quarterback that needs some time to develop but still reach greatness, like Jason Campbell, is much less sexy and not in their mind. And I like that one. Number five, the media doesn't have much faith in Gus to field an offense that maximizes a QB and their passing game's potential, or faith in Gus to allow Morris to do so. What are your thoughts, Week?
No, I think he's right all the way up and down the line. I mean, I think that it's true that Bo's worst games were big TV games, and I feel like when he needed to come through against Oregon, he did, and yet the media's takeaway from that was Bo gets lucky on last play of game he otherwise sucks in. And then the Florida game, everybody kind of remembers that one game where he really did poorly. But, I mean, other than that, he was very up and down, but he was a true freshman, for crying out loud. There's not a lot of true freshmen that have come into an SEC West team and with a mediocre running threat and a cobbled-together offensive line and one good, really, receiver and done very much. So I think he's got every opportunity to do better this year, provided he has protection.
That's right. And I think he got better later in the year. I think he was good against Alabama, made some plays. And I think bringing in Morris is going to help him.
In the fourth quarter against Georgia, he was really good. It was just like they were doing stuff that disrupted us early, but he really got it going later. So,
well, I think Bo Nix is really well when we just put him back there and go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We attack. We're letting him kind of run out on the edge and throw it or keep it or do other stuff with it. We're putting pressure on the defense. We're not kind of, trying to run the ball and control the clock and those kind of things.
Yeah. There's things he does well and things he doesn't do as well yet. I think him getting bulkier, getting more muscle and everything, muscle mass this year should have a benefit too.
And one of the things I was reading today was that he was among the best quarterbacks in the SEC at downfield passing. And so I think, again, we could do more of that than we did last year, and that he could be effective at it, especially as, you know, he gets more connection and more time with the wide receivers.
Absolutely.
I think these are good reasons, good discussions, and I think I think some of it was that the part about the standard for quarterbacks being different is there. I mean, I think people expect quarterbacks to walk off the bus from high school and be awesome, and I think Bo Nix's progression was much more normal. And I think, you know, I've said before, I wish when we did the preview show last year, I had just said, you know, pick the Florida game, circle it, it's a loss. This is the kind of thing that happens when you start a true freshman quarterback on the road in SEC games.
Yep.
It's how it is.
Could we have done better if we had played Gatewood more?
This is one of those things we'll never know.
Right.
It was all like, would it have actually hurt Bo's confidence and the team's confidence of Bo and all that? I just know that at that Florida game, Bo was terrible. And he didn't have it that day at all. You know, he really was the rest of the team played well enough to win. I'm going to say that. And some of it was the play calling, and some of it was him, the play calling that put him in bad positions.
Right.
And I think if we had pulled back, putting Gatewood, running more conservative, you know, ball control kind of offense with Gatewood and the running backs and stuff, it might have been different, but we never know now.
So. Yeah, never know. Well, it's just disappointing to me that he was such a committed Auburn guy since like ninth grade or something, and he happened to come in the same time as Bo Nix, and it just didn't work out. And I'll always regret. I mean, he may not turn out to be, he may turn out to be another Jeremy Johnson. Who knows? But I'll always regret that we'll never really get to find out, because it just, the timing ended up being more than anything. If he'd been there like 2 years earlier, or something, or like right before Stidham, God, you could have used him then. So, oh well. Any final thoughts as we wrap up our first practice show?
No, it's wonderful to talk about football again and to think that's about football on the horizon. That's exciting.
It is. Well, John, tonight the soundboard was out of order, but to be honest,
you are out of order. The whole trial is out of order.
That's right. The whole trial was out of order, but we got it in. We got it done. So I guess that'll do it for tonight. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. Wario, John.
Wario, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.